I was in a very famous TV show. And the title, Bojack.
Bojack!
Horseman Project, this is the intro.
Welcome back to Untitled Bojack Horseman Project. This is episode 4, where we will be discussing season 4 of, you guessed it, Bojack Horseman. My name is Matt Waters. I'm joined by my intrepid co-host, who is hopefully not drugging my coffee. I don't even drink coffee. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Don't worry. I've put the weight loss powder into other drinks that yes. we'll be consuming, not just the coffee.
Right. Great. We're in different locations, so if you've pulled that off, I have further questions. So it's season 4. I was maybe a little controversial last week when I said I thought season 2 was better than season 3. I think we're probably in agreement. Season 4 fucking rips, and it's the best one so far.
Yeah. The only thing is, I can't remember whether or not I think 5 is better than 4.
I think it's 4 and 5 are the ones that are in contention, but we'll find that out for sure next week. But what we know for sure is I think 4, so far, of our 4, is the best one.
Yeah, 4 is kind of incredible. 4 is like 3 seasons of it bubbling along, kind of like making a statement for being like one of the best shows on TV.
Mm.
Whereas I think this is the one where you're like, oh no, this might be the best show on TV. Which, I mean, it's 2017, so this is also the same year as Twin Peaks, The Return, and The Leftovers, the final season. So, like, it has some stiff competition in terms of, like, what else is up there. But I do think that, like, the general consensus was in 2017 that, like, BoJack is probably in, like, a top 5. Like, if you're doing a top 10 list, BoJack has to be kind of, like, on or around it. And
It steps up from just a surprisingly sharp and witty comedy that occasionally does some heavy stuff to, like, it's just so well, like, just no qualifiers of it being for animation or, oh, it's funny and then it does this. It's just straight up one of the best written shows.
I'm intrigued now where on Metacritic's, like, best shows of 2017 list it did end up.
It's just, like, I mean, while you're doing that, just, like, so many, like, long-form narratives that they pull off while keeping it fully episodic, as you know, as you will get into when we play our favorite game. I say that about 3 of the segments, and I think there are about 5 segments, but yeah, there will be one where you will discuss that. So remaining fully episodic while also weaving these longer stories, some of which you sneak up on you and you didn't realize. I mean, we know now, but on first watch you didn't even realize were playing out in front of you. And it's also, like, really light on BoJack. The entire first episode he is not in, and he's, when he is in the episodes, he's only in like less than half of them, and maybe even less than half, you know. Like, and I think that's like a test that a lot of shows try and pass and fail, is can you build a strong enough supporting cast and an interesting enough world that you don't need your, you know, titular character to, like, wear every hat and carry us. And they pass that test, because there's so much going on here, and you know, a lot of it is, you know, still wrapped around BoJack, like the Hollyhock and his mother stuff, like, takes up a lot of screen time, and that is all a BoJack story. But yeah, it's something I think of when I did the Matt Signal for EnterTheRealWorld.com, which is now launching as its own thing, stay tuned. And I remarked on how later episodes of Batman the Animated Series, they have, you know, they made Batgirl really interesting, and they, you know, they were able to do these stories where Batman can be pulled back a little bit, and that makes it all even more interesting. But yeah, a season dominated by a BoJack storyline that BoJack is barely in.
And I feel like it's going to make it very complicated for us to talk about the actual, like, best episodes of the season when we get to it, but that is a conversation for, like, after we've done all of our little things. I'm just revisiting 2017 in TV now, and I'm like, boy, was this, like, the end of an era in a lot of ways? Because, like, it's The Good Place, Twin Peaks, as I said, The Leftovers, Legion's first season is 2017, Halt and Catch Fire, I think, is wrapping up, Better Call Saul is on its second season, Handmaid's Tale, Rick and Morty's, like, second season, I think.
Before it got completely obnoxious.
Yeah, like, The American's at its peak, I think, like...
Is this, like, the end of the era where people would keep saying TV's better than movies now, and then, like... I feel like so many people came over to TV that TV then got a bit bad in a weird way.
I think this is kind of like, looking at this, I think there's the beginnings of the last few kind of like big serialized shows that are starting, like Americans, Halt and Catch Fire, Better Call Saul, like those kind of like the last ones that feel like they're in conversation with The Sopranos, The Wire, right. The Deadwoods of like the 2000s. Like, here are the 2010s versions of these shows. And then what we get replaced with, and looking at this list, Big Little Lies is kind of like a huge example of that, is we're transitioning into the prestige miniseries kind of format that we're going to see, where it's going to be dominated by streaming shows that last two seasons and like shows where we get the biggest actors and actresses on all of in all well, the world to come do a season or two, or we're going to reboot this and do a kind of anthology series. And
I think it's like symptomatic of it that TV got so crazy good and movies got really frustrating, and like particularly for actors that wanted to make like good high budget stuff, not like franchise schlock. A condition of luring them over to TV is you don't have them for that long, or they're very expensive, so it's in your interest to keep it short, kind of thing. And then, you know, Netflix and streaming and you know, every network wants a streaming service, and everything poisons the well big
time. I'm just looking at this now, and like other shows like, I mean, Better Things, the first season of Glow, again another kind of like final kicking of Netflix, American Vandal's second season, American Vandal's first season even. Like, all of these things are like, boy, TV was really fucking good. Yeah. Like, even like kind of like 7 years ago. Like, there's just so much depth to everything that's going on. Yeah. And now I feel like anyone who was a TV culture writer in 2017 is like wanting to get out and just decrying the fact that almost every single TV show nowadays should have been a movie.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Movies that should have been shows, shows that should have been movies. Yeah. Yep. It's a bleak time. As you say, yeah, so this season drops September 8th, 2017. Haven't been saying when they've been dropping up to now, but we're going to correct it and move forwards. So 2017. Yeah, a time as you have gone over. We have some season-long arcs for our characters, which we'll get into in a second, but just to kind of do some admin on some guest stars and whatnot, and also just to acknowledge the opening titles, you know, they change every season. We have a weird, like, kaleidoscope of characters that replaces, like, the red carpet thing and the set of secretariat and stuff. A weird one, I guess, because there's so many flashbacks and dream sequences and trippy stuff that they were like, oh, a kaleidoscope. Or maybe they were just like, I don't know, shove something cool looking in.
It's like the first season where there isn't kind of like a centralized point around which characters are gathering around. Because it would be weird to do it be like the peanut butter kind of like... the peanut butter governor race would be a weird one to kind of like have that.
Because BoJack never touches that storyline. Like,
no.
And that's like part of the joke, is he missed it. Like,
yeah. And I mean, like, I noticed that, like, it's, I think episode 7 is the first time that all five characters are together in the entire season, and potentially for the first time in like several seasons that all seven are like.
And they're all like, let's go get food. And then like, we don't know if they do it, and they probably don't. Also in the opening titles, I mean, for much of it, BoJack's living room is bare. And then when Hollyhock shows up, she is there. And then when Beatrice moves in with them, she is there. And in extremely dark fashion, you see Beatrice giving Hollyhock the coffee in the opening titles. And then they are both gone when they're gone. So it's like, even the opening titles are twisting that knife.
Is the bear nurse?
Because I assume I think she is there, yeah.
But is she also the same nurse for...
Is it like bears in this world flock towards nursing? If like, are they trying to do a weird thing where like...
I don't know if it's supposed to be the same nurse bear that
and like
that Herb has. I think it is. I think Tina is... It is the
same...
Oh,
is it Tina then? Yeah.
It's Tina who is the same nurse that Herb had. So...
Well, it might be the BoJack. Yeah, yeah. It's also funny that, like, bears seem to speak bear in a way that a lot of animals don't. I think Tina does speak at one point, because she reaches out to Sarah, or it's not Tina, it's another bear or something, reaches out to Sarah Lynn and speaks English, but otherwise they just speak bear, and most of the other animals just speak English, and it's like, what is that about bears, man? So we have a lot of new, like, big important characters. I think I want to get the cameos out of the way first, though. So I'm not going to do all of them, but some of the big ones. We have David Chase as himself, Vincent D'Onofrio as himself, Lin-Manuel Miranda as Crackerjack Sugarman in like a one episode, tiny, tiny role. Colman Domingo as Eddie, Paul Giamatti as himself playing BoJack for a second. Mark Jacobs and Tim Gunn. I guess Mark Jacobs is playing Shark Jacobs. Harvey Fierstein as an ovulation device. Felicity Huffman as herself, Zach Braff as himself, RuPaul as Queen Antonia, Sir Mix-a-Lot as himself, Hannibal Buress as Miles, and Martin Short as the sort of patriarch of the Stilton family. For me, that Vincent D'Onofrio cameo is one of my favorite one sort of episode appearances anyone ever does, just because of how hard he is going at that. Like, and it's like, you would almost believe it isn't him, because you're so used to hearing him these days as Wilson Fisk in the various Marvel things. And but to hear his more, like, fast and loose voice that we heard in, like, Mystic Pizza kind of thing.
But he's still got, like, the cadence that he has in kind of, like, more recent movies. It's still, like, very noticeably...
Yeah.
D'Onofrio.
But this, like... D'Onofrio has had Enoughrio. And him talking about, like, you'll never find a man that fits these qualities, and then Mr. Peanut Butter has just wandered into the background, and that's how he got his show. Do you have a favorite of those one-time people before we get into the bigger ones?
Zach Braff is real good.
He sure is. He drives a Prius, did you know?
Zach Braff is real good in that one episode. Mm. I do also like Paul Giamatti, who is, like, just doing his, like, absolute best in that episode. I don't think anyone else, like, steals an episode, really. Like, RuPaul's fun. Yeah. Like a lot of these guys are fun, but I don't think any of them, like...
You do have, like, Colman Domingo doing the whole episode. That's almost bigger than a cameo at that point, so maybe I shouldn't have put him in.
Yeah, there's a few people who, like, one episode appearances, but yeah, I mean, Colman Domingo's really good. Yeah.
So, bigger characters this is. Now, I'm not going to make you talk about them one at a time, because that was a real time suck. But we have Katrina Peanut Butter, Mr. Peanut Butter's ex-wife, played by Lake Bell, running Mr. Peanut Butter's campaign as he's running for governor. His opponent is Woodchuck Kudchuck Berkowitz, played by Andre Brower. We meet some of BoJack and Beatrice's extended family. Oh, Beatrice is back, Wendy Malick. Joseph Sugarman and Honey Sugarman, played by Matthew Broderick and Jane Krakowski. BoJack's ostensible daughter, Hollyhock, Manheim Guerrero Robinson, Zilberschlag, Sung Fonzarelli McQuack, played by Aparna Nancherla, Courtney Portnoy by Sharon Horgan, Stephanie Stilton, Ralph, Princess Carolyn's boyfriend's sister, played by Kimiko Glenn. She's also Diane's boss. Flip McVicker, they keep this tradition going. They kind of debut a character very late that is going to be a big deal next season. So Flip McVicker, the sort of like tortured writer played by Rami Malek, and Yolanda Buenaventura, Natalie Morales, who's kind of Todd's new love interest. So I think those last two are disqualified. But of the sort of like, yeah, those sort of big seven. And I never acknowledge the people who are coming back. But like, you still have Judah, you still have Beatrice Horseman, and people like that. But like, is it Hollyhock? Is it like, there's so many people getting good work. The whole like extended family are excellent. Like from Hollyhock through Beatrice through the distant relatives, all extremely good. But do you have a favorite of those?
I feel like I have to exclude the ones who like become full-on recurring characters, I guess, because like Hollyhock's not done really.
No, but like, I'm not asking. I'm phrasing this wrong. It's just like these are our kind of people joining the ongoing show, and who is like making the strongest impression here.
I mean, it's Hollyhock. Yeah, Hollyhock, like, so completely and totally. It is a completely, totally winning performance from Aparna Nancherla, who, like, I've seen her in things before this. I knew her from around the comedy scene, but this to me was like such a incredible statement of like just her talent.
It's like, not to be rude, but it's like a surprisingly like low-key casting for such a big character. And like, you can see a world where they go out and want to get a name. And you know, they were right not to. She's excellent. And I'm not, you know, disparaging anyone. I just know how TV works. And I think that works to its benefit, that she is this kind of like teenage girl that's rocking up and like, you know, is bowling BoJack over, and she's like from Kansas, and she's come to the big city kind of thing. But yeah, no, she's really, really good. Everyone else is kind of like just doing comedy stuff. I do think Wendy Malick is excellent, but she's been excellent throughout the whole fucking show. She's gone from, we'll give her an episode to say something devastatingly hurtful, to like, hey, do you think you could do like a dramatic arc? And it's like, of fucking course I can. I'm Wendy Malick.
Yeah, like I think all the horses this season are completely incredible. Lin-Manuel Miranda is like the most distracting out of all of them.
It's odd, isn't it? Because he's probably the most recognizable for younger people at this point, and yet he. You know, he sings around the piano and that's basically it. I do like the touch that like everyone in that episode is like a Tony winner or a Tony nominee or whatever it is. But yeah, all these musical parents and everything. And even Colman Domingo.
Yeah. But then, I mean, if we're going for anyone else, Andre Brower, like this is kind of obviously the resurgence for him in terms of he's been on Brooklyn Nine-Nine for a couple of seasons at this point. So this is just them basically weaponizing the new personality that he's cultivated from Brooklyn Nine-Nine to basically come in and be straight man, but also funny. But like it's a really good counterpoint in the season where you can't really bounce Mr. Peanut Butter off of BoJack or like the other characters in the same way. So like Andre Brower
needs a foil.
Is there anyone else that
I sort of didn't want to go through them one at a time because that's going to take forever, but then it's also kind of unfair to lump them all in one giant thing.
No, I know. I'm just looking at like who is left, and I'm like, the two that make the biggest impression for sure are Hollyhock and Andre Brower, and they're also the two that kind of get entire subplots to themselves and like get to be the main recurring character in like multiple episodes of the season, whereas I think everyone else is kind of like, if you're gonna say Natalie Morales, she is fun, but she is very much in the B or C plot of the episodes where she gets to show up, because Todd has never had an A plot at all in the show.
Yeah, even the one called Yay Todd episode is actually just him in the background of like six stories kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. And it is interesting they continue to do this where like you get your season long arc, you get your big dramatic episode everybody talks about, and then you start to pepper in some elements to set up next season as a sort of soft here's what is to come kind of thing. So before you test your memory, tell us what every episode is, I'm just going to quickly summarize the plots of the season, and we will get into some of them I think later on, and some of them maybe right now. So BoJack, you know, he ran off at the end of last season. He spends, I think it's like a year away in his like his grandparents' like summer home doing some soul searching. We find some stuff out via some flashbacks. When he returns, Hollyhock, a horse girl, shows up claiming to be his daughter, and he tries to navigate that, like a world where he might be a dad, and trying to get to the bottom of that, and then things go real bad, and we will be talking about it. But I'm basically gonna just say right now, we'll talk about BoJack's thing in depth in a bit. Todd is probably the easiest, like he's basically trying to have a life without BoJack, and as an openly asexual person, like he goes to asexual meetups and everything, which is made more difficult for him as he is made to pose as the fake boyfriend of celebrity Courtney Portnoy, and that doesn't quite sit right with him. You know, at first he's happy to do it, and we have weird stuff like he accidentally influences the fashion of all the background characters of the show, which is a very good bit for a character that is kind of in the background so much. And yeah, he's just trying to found a new business, and he meets his new potential partner. But yeah, it's an interesting season for Todd because he's separated from BoJack. They speak, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm enjoying not being your friend. Actually, I'm finding myself." And it's like, you know, I think he's finding himself because he's learned he's asexual more than anything. But it doesn't hurt nothing. But BoJack's not around to like kick his self-esteem into the dirt.
No, yeah, I mean, Todd's story this season is interesting in terms of, like, because it kind of, how do you keep his plotline going in a show where he's not going to interact with the main character? But I think it's also part of the very DNA of the show in terms of showing that that's going to become part of it, is that, like, BoJack is just going to become less and less important to all of these characters, and he will be sequestered away in his own kind of, like, fucked up little world, which he's created for himself, which I think is ultimately kind of, like, speaks to the entire theme of the show. And it's this kind of example of, like, the actual, like, structure of the show speaking to the themes.
Absolutely. Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, they're, like, more linked than they've ever been, which is ironic because by the end of this, they break up. It's dominated by Mr. Peanut Butter running for governor of California, as he was offered to do at the end of last season by his ex-wife Katrina, and Diane tries to be cool with them running a campaign out of their house, and his ex-wife basically being there all the time. They're fighting, they're having sex problems, and then they're fighting and having angry sex and not talking about their problems. He does eventually drop out. They try to fix their marriage, and then, yeah, they just finally are honest with themselves. And, like, the material is good. Like, it's well-written and well-acted. But it's just, like, from day one, these two have been so clearly missuited. And I know that he occasionally comes through in the clutch and is, like, good to her, but, like, they just are not compatible on several important levels. And I do think the phrasing of the, like, their relationship is like a Magic Eye poster, and, like, sometimes when you squint just right, it's perfect, but she's so tired of squinting. That's, like, so good writing. Which is ironic because I said so good writing. But, yeah.
I think in previous seasons, Peanut Butter has been, like, too much of a comedic character, whereas I think this season, actually having them be in their own plotline with just themselves, it kind of does allow them both to be more dramatic in a way that they haven't got to be together in the past, where, like, it's always on the edges, but the show's mined more tension from them being apart, with Diane going away and, like, not telling him that she's returned to the country and stuff like that, whereas this is, like, they are with each other the entire season. And
I think it's my favorite Mr. Peanut Butter season. I actually really like the goofy, like, governor race and, like, the downhill ski race. Like, he doesn't have enough votes, so he challenges him to a downhill ski race when he doesn't know how to ski, which Todd wins. And then, because Todd doesn't, steps down, he's governor of California for, like, 6 seconds. That forces an election, so they have that after all. And
so you're not a fan of Pickles or Plenty?
I hate Pickles, and that's for us to talk about in depth at a later date. Yeah, I don't know, I like the governorship. Like, I think it is just, like, giving him something real, rather than just being this idiot that kind of gums up the works for BoJack and, like, is siloed off with Todd so much. Yeah, I like the governor race. I like the way they write the breakup and them kind of seeing it coming before it happens. And, like, like I said, they're having their problems before that even happens. And then, like, they want to buy the new house together. And then, like, before they will spend even a second in it, they're like, oh, what if we go on holiday? And just, yeah, that it's been this sort of thing that is true for us in front of them the whole time.
Just speaking on that bridge, I love that that bridge is, like, completely chock-a-block with cars, because that bridge is surely thousands of miles long.
Yeah, like, it says Honolulu 2,000 miles, I think. And I like that it's another one of these things where, like, I talked in the very first episode about how much mileage they get out of so many of these dumb jokes back when people were like, oh, this show is okay, I guess. And, like, it's just a throwaway line about, as part of Mr. Peanut Butter's quest for governorship, someone wants a bridge to Hawaii, and then it is built, and then the cost of it means that they can't get rescued in the underground episode, and then they use it to try and drive to Hawaii, and it's like, oh, a 2-lane bridge to Hawaii. Of course it's fucking backed up, and it's 2,000 miles.
How many cars is that? That is, like, that must be most of the population of America in cars.
Just trying to go to Hawaii, yeah. I mean, we keep being told, stop going to Hawaii, tourist. But yeah, and then Princess Carolyn, there's a chance we could be talking about her, but we'll see how the argument plays out. But she basically spends the season trying to have a baby with Ralph. It does not go well for her or him. They break up. She loses the baby. She also switches from being an agent to a manager.
What's the difference between an agent and a manager, Matt?
Well, a manager can produce. An agent gets jobs for the client, whereas a manager manages a career and can also produce. Some shit like that. I really don't. God bless Princess Caroline. Like the kind of unsung hero of the whole show, where, like, on a first watch through, I wouldn't say I didn't like her. It's just, like, I'm in it for, like, the people whose names I know. And that's harsh to Amy Sedaris, but, like, and then, like, you come to appreciate, like, she's such a goddamn trooper as an actor and as a character. And, like, she's always there and she always gets her one episode a season and it's always really good. And it's some of the worst stuff that happens to her, basically.
Yeah, it's also the incredible pivot because, like, whenever she's in an episode which isn't her episode, she is such a professional face who is, like, trucking along with all of the Hollywood bullshit and all the rest of it. Like, she is the one who is the real conduit into the parody of that world.
And she's so useful because she's not only a plot device, because she's the agent of the manager of two of the characters, but she's also, like, BoJack's only real confidant, and, like, Diane clearly is not good at having friends, and, like, although they seem to not actually get on that well sometimes, but, you know, she's useful, and yeah, you can call her in, you can tag her in for, like, a 2-minute scene, both, you know, in a meta sense with Amy Sedaris being a pro, and, you know, her character's job is to be just brought in for annoying conversation she has to have.
Yeah, I do enjoy that this is a season where they're like, we've not really done much with Princess Carolyn and Todd, so let's see what happens when we throw these two together. And the show kind of, like, it does vaguely back off it, because she only exists with Todd at the same time as his crazy scheme for the season. Yeah. But it is interesting.
Yeah, right. It is time for one of our favourite segments. As you may or may not know, I make way too many notes. Ben makes absolutely none. And this comes together in a wonderful confluence as Ben tries to summarise the plot of every episode of the season off the top of his head from just the titles. Did very well in the first two seasons, got them all right. Did stumble on just the one episode of season 3. Can you come back with a vengeance? And after you name it, I will throw in my favourite just little joke that we're not going to talk about unless I say it. So, see Mr. Peanut Butter Run.
This is one of the first big Peanut Butter episodes. Did he have one last season? Or is this, like, his first, like, this is entirely Mr. Peanut Butter episode?
I think that may be true.
Yeah, but this is basically Mr. Peanut Butter's origins, how he gets his job, and the aforementioned Vincent D'Onofrio joke at the beginning of the season, and how, I mean, we've already talked about this one, he convinces Goodchuck Berkowitz to have a race, in a ski race, but he can't ski, and so he goes to ski school, but learns nothing from ski school whatsoever.
Yeah, but he nails all of the classes, because he has to rip up, he has to not do the reading, and he has to not do this, and my favourite joke is Katrina calling Judah Rain Man Bun. Mwah. Excellent.
Did teacher come back at all?
I don't know. I don't think, because he does turn into a butterfly, clearly, but yes. I don't know if we see him. Yeah, maybe. The Old Sugarman Place.
This is kind of what probably could have been the first episode of the season in, like, a normal world, but I guess they're, like, playing into the structure of the season where Diane has no idea where BoJack is, but this is BoJack going to the Old Sugarman Place and basically having an experience in Michigan where he tries to rebuild his old family home, making friends with the dragonfly next door. Meanwhile, the past is, like, intruding on the present, and we're getting the backstory into Beatrice's family and kind of, like, what made her the mother that she is to BoJack.
Matthew Broderick says some truly awful things as Joseph Sugarman, and he's very good at it, and I feel bad about saying some of them, but if it's anyone's fault, it's the Jews for peeving off Hitler so bad. It's just... Ugh, right.
Truly incredible. Also, just the end of the episode in which they reveal that Honey Sugarman has had a lobotomy.
Ugh,
and
yeah.
Does Jane Krakowski come back at all after that?
I don't think so.
I don't think that they do not have Honey speak again all season, and she becomes this, like, incredibly dark spectre anytime she's mentioned, where she is only in silhouette or
That will be coming up. Hooray, Todd episode.
This is the one in which Todd, the setup to this episode is Todd is the triangle player for an orchestra, and the head of the orchestra is like, he is one of the greatest people I know. He gives his time over to everything, and I hope one day he does not come to play the triangle.
Yeah, it's Good Will Hunting. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is basically Todd and how he helps everyone in his life to do everything he wants at the expense of himself. And at the end of the episode, he finally makes the time for himself and goes to the asexual support group. Actually, a really lovely kind of like ending to the episode.
Yeah. I do love getting my picture taken. It's proof I exist, is a nice little quote. I feel like what you're doing is you're bouncing back from having gotten one wrong last time by showing off more, by including a lot more detail than normal. And I respect it about that. Episode 4 is Commence Fracking.
First of two kind of issue episodes of the season in which basically Mr. Peanut Butter sells their house to a fracking company. And, I mean, is there really much more to this? This is the one where Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane are having the sexual problems, but this is kind of like the second big Peanut Butter political episode of the season.
Yeah, I don't think he sells it. I think he just agrees to have fracking done.
Yeah, agrees to have fracking.
Yeah.
Is this also the one where BoJack and Hollyhock are trying to find her mum? And they're visiting all of the old flames in this episode as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also where the Harvey Fierstein is. Like, they're trying to get pregnant. There are two I really like here, so I'm going to cheat and do them both. Have you considered impregnating a younger woman? Is just brutally awful from the albino rhino gyno. And nothing for Josh Radnor. How quickly we forget. That's quite a nice one. Episode 5 is called Thoughts and Prayers.
Again, another issue episode. This is BoJack trying to tackle, well, not BoJack, it's Diane trying to tackle the gun issue, but basically it turns into Diane finds out she really likes guns, and so starts to get all women to have guns to protect themselves. And this is, of course, the thing that motivates politicians in America more than anything, is to strip guns away from everyone so that women can't have them, which is a wonderful kind of sign up to this episode. But I do think the actual issue part of it is a bit underbaked in comparison to like other ones that they've done.
Yeah.
Even if the thoughts and prayers thing is like so stuck in my mind, like any time anyone makes a statement, it always is thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. I really love that, like, because their movie has a lot of gun violence in it, they have to keep trimming it down for every like location where there's been a mass shooting, so in the end it's 7 seconds and it could be an H&M commercial.
Where's cool. The H&M?
Yeah, that's literally it, and that's all we can use. Episode 6 is called Stupid Piece of Shit.
Oh my god, yeah, this is basically BoJack's internal monologue around his life. It is incredibly kind of like uncomfortable to watch. Like, I mean, the bit with him eating breakfast where he's like, you're not gonna have an Oreo, are you? That's not breakfast. Don't eat an Oreo, you fat piece of shit. Like, it's just I don't know, like, it's one of those ones where I don't actually remember like what the individual things, I just remember the BoJack internal monologue part of the episode.
It's also the one with they want Todd to marry Courtney Portnoy, right, in a sham, yes, wedding. And that is where my favorite quote from this one, Rutabaga says, "We are doing to this wedding what Robert Durst did to that lady and Fred Durst did to his career." Killing it. Episode 7 is called Underground.
Underground, the fracking finally pays off, in which Mr. Peanut Butter's house collapses in the middle of a fundraiser and they have to live underground for 2 weeks. Is it?
About that, yeah.
About 2 weeks. Yeah. This is the one where they just get really brutal to Jessica Biel and Zach Braff.
She's such a fucking trooper. And like, when they say, I think less famous Michelle Monaghan is right, and then that attempted movie star is right, it's just like... And this, that's also this... funny because Michelle Monaghan isn't even famous either. Like,
this isn't the episode with the B-list joke though, is it?
Like, no, that one's later. Yeah. And she also says that you can Jess a leave in at some point instead of be a leave in. Yes, they also cook and eat Zach Braff. The judge.
This is BoJack. He's having to apologize to Felicity Huffman for throwing things off of his deck over the course of several seasons. And so he becomes the guest judge on Felicity Huffman's Booty Academy LA, which had been like mentioned several times as FHBA, and everyone was assuming it was like a fairly well-to-do court drama. And this is Holly falls in love with an intern, and BoJack tries to prove that the intern is a piece of shit, and then ultimately proves that the intern is a piece of shit, but not for the reasons that BoJack thinks he's going to be a piece of shit.
No.
And also, this is Princess Carolyn goes with the Stiltons to see them on their cat-hating holiday.
Sure does. The line reading of Doggy Doggy, what now? is very good.
I also really like in the first episode when it's not just Doggy Doggy, what now? It's Diane Diane, what now?
Yes. Ruthie.
Kristen Bell guest stars as a future ancestor of Princess Carolyn, telling a story of one of the shittiest days of her life, in which her family heirloom jewelry breaks and she discovers that it is not actually a priceless heirloom. She miscarries but doesn't have the heart to tell Ralph that this has happened. And doesn't a project fall through as well? Mm-hmm. A project falls through. She has to fire Judah because she finds out about Judah rejecting the offer from Vigor last season to like buy the company.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, ultimately she gets drunk and breaks up with Ralph. And
sure does.
Yep.
And
but also Todd is Clown Dentist.
Yes. Do they just say the names of movies and actors? How does that generate revenue? Is a good one. And also, you're a real tough broad, except the uterus area. Pretty weak. Yeah, they're very good at this incredibly ugly like dialogue.
And they make it obvious that it's not actually the opinion that you should stand by. I feel like, because I know there is the frequent criticism of like, don't be a man and make misogynist jokes as like a mm-hmm. as a joke, because you're still saying the content of it. But I feel like there is an inflection to the way that
they get it exactly right. And there's so many seemingly harmless, innocuous turns of phrase that they highlight, like the whole thing about "you're so easy" kind of thing. You know, like yeah, loving that Cali lifestyle! Exclamation mark! All lower caps.
God, this is kind of the pre-finale episode, I guess, because like basically this is like every plot line comes to a head in this episode, where Holly finds out that she's being drugged by Beatrice, although she doesn't find out. She finds out she's being drugged, and they don't find out it's from Beatrice until like the very end of the episode.
Yeah.
Woodchuck almost loses the race because he hasn't had any hands since the underground episode, and so he has the serial killer hands, which means that makes it worse. Jessica Biel is running instead of peanut butter at this point.
Yes.
And her hating avocado is what causes her to lose the race.
Yes.
Ultimately.
That is where the B-list thing is, I think.
That's the B-list bit. Flipbook Vicar bitches Filbert to Princess Carolyn, which is the name of her child.
Correct.
And she fakes BoJack's signature on a contract to lock him into doing the show. And we are introduced to Yolanda. But yeah, the clown dentist venture that's been bubbling away in the background of the season, she basically like shuts him down.
Tony Shahoob. This is whattimeisitrightnow.com, not whattimeisit15yearsago.com/geocities/month fan page. I don't know. That just tickled me. Time's motherfucking Arrow. It's not called that, but you know.
It's not. Time's Arrow. Beatrice is...
I think we're going to be talking about this one in a minute.
This is basically an episode from Beatrice's perspective, but she has dementia, and so it kind of takes place all over time, and yeah, it's real good.
Yeah. A very innocuous little thing in it is, welcome to California. Hippies, welcome. Gays, not yet. And our season finale is What Time Is It Right Now?
God, I watched this one today. But, I mean, again, it's very similar to Love in That Cali Lifestyle, where it's just kind of like bringing everything to a close, where BoJack figures out who Hollyhock's parents are and discovers that he is not actually her father, and so tracks down Henrietta and gets the details over to Hollyhock and kind of like has a meeting with Hollyhock's parents. Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane make their ill-fated journey across to Hawaii, which ultimately ends with Mr. Peanut Butter building a Bell's library for her that she resents because she wanted her dream to be of her own making rather than just kind of like given to her.
Uh-huh.
And Filbert is picked up.
Yeah.
To season by What Time Is
It? WhatTimeIsItRightNow.com.
What Time Is It Right Now?
It comes with a baked-in audience of people who want to know what the time is.
Right now.
Right now, yeah.
And Todd and Yolanda discover that the dentist that they let loose in the woods have all got rabies, which is really dark. It's like a little sub-joke because you die from rabies within a week of contracting rabies.
Generally, yes. And they are rabid clown dentists released into some woods near an abandoned insane asylum and a school. And then they turn it into a business where it's the run for your life. Like, it's the greatest workout you've ever had. And it's like, no, they will bite you and they will kill you.
It is funny because, like, last season obviously ends with everything tying together, and I do wonder if that got a bit much, whereas this season nothing really ties together.
They're all breaking up, like, organically drifting apart kind of thing. Like, yeah, there was a real reason for them all to be together in season one, because Todd lived with Bojack, Princess Carolyn was his agent, and Diane was writing the book, and Diane is married to Mr. Peanut Butter, who loved Bojack, and over time, like, all of that is... It's not true anymore, except Princess Carolyn is his manager. Well done. You did real good there. You went into more detail than was necessary. I think you have exonerated your slip-up last time. Speaking of doing well, we are going to pick two of those episodes, one each, and we're going to go into... I know, there are three, aren't there?
There's four.
There's four, because Ruthie's one of them as well. Right, I think Time's Arrow is in, obviously.
Yes, Time's Arrow has to be in, and then it's just... Is it Ultra Gum the place? Is it Stupid Piece of Shit?
Okay, so my favourite of these other ones is Stupid Piece of Shit.
Yeah.
What is yours?
It's Ruthie.
It's Ruthie. Okay, the Old Sugarman place is also real good, but, like, you've got stiffer competition.
I think there is an argument to make that, like, the BoJack trilogy of the season, which is really ultimately the Old Sugarman place, Stupid Piece of Shit, and Time's Arrow. Like, I feel like those three very much kind of, like, tell... the entire plot of like the internal struggle of the season in a really effective way.
I think we should talk about Ruthie because there is more to talk about. I think we could summarize why Stupid Piece of Shit is so good in like a couple of sentences.
Yeah, I think
to reduce how good it is.
Yeah, but Stupid Piece of Shit is kind of like, I'm not saying it is just the gimmick, but the gimmick is kind of...
It really works.
it really works, and I think you can just play this episode to someone as like a standalone thing, and it really really does work.
Yeah.
And whereas,
like,
I think
I mean like, not to get too deep and personal here, but like, as someone with depression, when it real flares up, this is the experience. I have walked around the corridors of my workplace listening to music and just cursing myself out for everything I have done or said or whatever that day, and to see it on it feels stupid because it's like, of course everyone feels that, not everyone, you know, of course other people feel this way, but to like see it that way and portrayed as well as it is, with like, it's not just the monologue, it's that they throw in they have the piece of music, Kay Flay's In the Cut is put in there, and they use this kind of like crude art style of like almost a crayon drawn horse kind of thing,
which keeps coming back, I think, over the course of the show, is like whenever Bojack is like telling events of like what he did, like in the episode 10 when he's like speaking to Hollyhock's parents, like that is how he is like internalizing like what the activities that he did is in this kind of like cartoon style.
And I think the thing that hits hardest in this is when he knows that Hollyhock has it too, when he comes home and like she's had a difficult day and she says, oh yeah, I have this voice, and that goes away, right? And he lies to her. That makes it really hit home, because, you know, the reason he is so averse to her and the idea of fatherhood is he thinks he is just an absolutely ruinous, beyond redemption person, and he's, you know, maybe he's right, but he doesn't want that to live in her as it has lived in him, as all the horrible shit that's happened throughout this family, as we find out in this season. And, like, it does, but it's not directly his fault in the same way, as we'll learn from Time's Arrow. But, yeah, like, when he starts seeing the tangible effects that she's having, having on her. Right, let's talk about Ruthie, and then let's talk about Time's Arrow. Because I quite like doing this, because like we talked about the Princess Carolyn episode in a previous season.
Yeah, I think the benefit, as I said, like the benefit of this season is like those three episodes we talked about, they're all very much the BoJack family stuff, which I think in these like later seasons of the show becomes like the real backbone of the entire show. Like that is kind of like what they're pitching this on, is the depression and the generational trauma. Sorry to bring up that word across everything. And I have to imagine we're going to talk about Free Churro next week. Like, I genuinely can't imagine a world where we don't talk about Free Churro for what that one is. But yeah, like I think Ruthie stands out because, again, this is... There's so many jokes, but it's also so dark and so personal on so many levels. And again, it kind of like brings that... It's got the realism of what's going on with Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane in terms of their marriage crumbling, but also just... so much more of a condensed package than that one.
I think in a season where, like, they have these real gut punches and big reveals and stuff, for this kind of side episode with, the, you know, the narrative framing device being Ruthie, the great-great-great-granddaughter of Princess Carolyn, talking about her for, like, a school project or whatever, and it's all, they're getting all this mileage out of the future, like, the bean system is the way for they've replaced clocks with the bean system. And
all hell the bean.
Yeah, exactly. For the final reveal, and, like, she keeps getting told off for how this story is really dark, and there's so many incidental side characters. She keeps going, no, it's so important, it ends happy, I promise. And then we learn that Princess Carolyn, when she's feeling shitty, she imagines this scenario. And none of it, you know, that it's not real.
This isn't the framing device you think it is. This is Princess Carolyn's story that she tells herself.
Yeah.
And the fact that she...
And it just ends sad, like... Yeah,
and she does this to Bojack. Bojack who calls her to complain about a day in which she had to queue.
I am a famous Diane.
And that's the thing, is like, you don't know how the B plot line of this episode is going to tie into the A plot line, because, like, Ruthie is talking about, like, this is going to be like become important, and you realize that the way it ultimately ties in is Bojack is so selfish, he doesn't even ask Princess Caroline like how her day was.
I think he does, but then he just steamrolls her and talks about himself instead, and like she smiles about it, and it comes back to the dinner episode last season, the best thing that ever happened to me or whatever it's called, where like he is so relentlessly awful to her all the time, and she just can't help but see that little sliver of good, and like I think she's just so has spent so much time with him that she kind of almost gets a laugh out of how awful he is, and just is like, that's Bojack. And it's really good for like the length of the season, the length of the show, even like their relationship together. As I say, that's the one that doesn't ever really crumble in the way the others do,
it's crumbled before the show begins. Like, the relationship is over, but they will always maintain this, like, we spent 7 years in a relationship and we have this professional thing to fall back on, but like the actual, like, they still have this emotional connection, even if the kind of romantic sexual part of it is like just completely gone. They've managed to get to a point almost where it works. And then I mean, like, the Ralph breakup is so tragic, because it's not because it, I feel like they could work it out if they could actually have those conversations.
She's just so hurt and in the moment, and as I said, he has laid on that, the, you know, everything's so easy with you, that's why I love you, and he doesn't know what he's saying, but and like,
and I think
I had this memory that like the other shoe dropped and Ralph was actually a dick, and maybe that never actually happens, and I'm just like, there's so much of that in this show in general. Because, like, the stuff with, like, you know, going to visit his family, but then he does stick up for her. And, yeah, like going to the checkup, and, like, the stuff with her necklace, which it turns out, you know, they tell this elaborate story about it being a priceless family heirloom.
Again,
from the
fun
old country.
Animation. Yes. Fun animation, doing the kind of, like, the almost like the South Park-like style, like, craft paper cutouts.
Yeah.
The cats.
And then it turns out it's fake, and it's bullshit, and it's worth nothing. But she still wears it throughout the whole show, and I like that Ruthie is wearing it in the in those scenes. But yeah, to go from like losing the baby to breaking up with Ralph, like, because she's just like, I'm just gonna get drunk in the apartment with Todd and the clown dentists, and then she's just so raw, and because he doesn't know what has happened, like, it doesn't feel as inappropriate to him to step away as it would if he... Oh wait, no, does she tell him?
She does tell. Well, she does.
Oh, she tells him. And then she's like, oh, and also this isn't my first one, and I've had 5 previous miscarriages, and I could have 5 more. Are you prepared for that? And he kind of skirts around it, but I think he is not prepared for that.
I don't think he is prepared for that, and that's why he's kind of like suggesting we need to think about other options and stuff. And she
and that
finds
is just
it.
Not, yeah, that is not an option for her at all. And like,
even though by the end of the season it feels like she has come around to thinking maybe it is an option.
It's saying it like yeah. For the biggest piece of shit of them all to have that like moment of just like truth and emotional honesty and be like, hey, have you ever thought about adopting? You'd be a great mother. And like Judah has told us she'd be a good mother. And like Rutabaga was like, it's so good. It would be so funny if you were. He's like, it's good you're not a mother. You'd be hilarious at it or whatever. Yeah. This is obviously bigger than you and I. Like, we're two dudes. We are not people with uteruses. Like, this is a huge thing that women go through. And yeah, it's fucking brutal. And her to just casually throw that out there of like, oh, this is, you know, I've had two with you, and then I've had more before that. Like, yeah. Oh. And just knowing that Princess Carolyn is the character that, like, we get so little window into her life. And when we do, it's like, oh, God, it's tragedy all the way down.
Yeah, and, I mean, I don't know why, but this episode has, like, stuck out to me. It's like, this is the episode I think about when I think about the show. Like, in other terms, I think about, like, entire character arcs and like plot lines, whereas like as a single episode this might be the one that I think about.
It's certainly like it's like narratively very, it's like showing off, look how good we are at writing television.
Yeah, and I mean like, but also like you got fantastic, I mean like Kristen Bell is so good in this episode as well as playing Ruthie, and then you've also got like, I mean we've said like this, the fact that two of the best recurring characters on the show were like in terms of performances, like you've got Raul Esparza as Ralph and Diedrich Bader as Judah kind of like just hanging out on the scenes of this, and I'm glad this isn't the last we're going to see of either of those characters, but like this being their farewell in a way that could feel fairly final is yeah. like really tragic as well.
Yeah, because as you say, she also she fires Judah, and Courtney Portnoy fires her because of the failure of Mistaken, and the
we haven't talked about Sharon Horgan on this show.
Yeah, she's it's so bizarre that she's so good at these like posh English accents as an Irish woman, but I mean, you know, there's no shortage of us around to make fun of, but.
She's also got that thing where, like, her voice is so different to, like, her regular voice that it's a real kind of, like, struggle for me to actually think of it as Sharon Horgan.
Yeah, we talk about people being unrecognisable and that one. You haven't watched any Disenchantment, have you?
I've not watched any Disenchantment.
Yeah, no. she's real good in that. Yeah, I thought it was fucking Jennifer Saunders. Like, she's real good in that as Bean's mother.
Yeah, obviously, but it's like it is this quite funny thing where like I assume because of just how long the tail is on like when they're making the show that you can literally see kind of like the TV landscape and who they're plucking from, because it's like Catastrophe starts probably in the US kind of like a year, 2 years before this, so they're obviously getting from that. Andrew Brower from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like obviously you got Rami Malek this season in like playing the character, but obviously we're a couple seasons into Mr. Robot.
Yeah, she's in Game Night, right?
Yes, she is. Yes, but that's like, 2018. That's a year later than this.
So, like, do you think she had like moved to America and like, you know, she just gets work? It's like, oh, you're good, and now you're now you're available.
I assume it is one of those things where like Catastrophe is such a big thing in certain circles that she is getting a lot of attention for that. It's so funny to me that Rami Malek is doing like his big season on BoJack is the same year he wins an Oscar.
Yeah. And he's so much better on BoJack, which goes without saying. But you know, yeah, the Courtney Portnoy thing, like we'll come to that as a what it unlocks for them. But yeah, as this just sort of Megan Fox coded, like you know, just kind of
they've done kind of like female celebrities before, but this is the first time that they've gone for like the kind of the A-list actress. Yeah, in that way.
Yeah, and she's in Mistaken, which is the guy from Taken's niece, is she?
Yes.
Yeah, is the plot. And yeah, they're trying to put this movie together, and it failed because of all the mass shootings and everything. But and the sham wedding doesn't work out because Todd can't do it. Because he's fine to pose as her boyfriend, but he can't have a fake wedding. Or a real wedding for a fake marriage, even though it comes with the standard Hollywood clause of everything. But yeah, I mean, it's just so... It's so sad, but it still manages to get all the jokes in. It still manages to, like, you know, Charlie Witherspoon buying the Utah Jazz instead of Vim. and like they're not good agents, but they're getting better. that, not that just he bought them, that he bought them and then tried to set them to work at his agency. real good. You've got Paul F. Tompkins back as this like offensively stereotypical Italian waiter who keeps saying Miss Carey, like Miss Carey, and like he just keeps saying Miss Carey to her while she's going through that. It's all real rough stuff. Oh, and also, Ralph is also mad that Princess Carolyn still had the apartment, and like she's offered that to Todd, and I think they live together next season out of this apartment, or that's my memory of it anyway. But yeah, like ends real sad, but it is, and I think the fact that they basically lie to you, like they promise it will be okay, and then it isn't. It's like, oh no, you can't do that to me.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, okay, yeah, I absolutely adore this episode, but we absolutely must talk
about it's Time's Arrow. It's Time's Arrow all day. I think it's the highest rated episode of the show. It's got like a 9.8.
I think the finale might be like
people
like butting heads with it. People love, or not the finale, the penultimate episode.
The one with all the like, yeah. I'll withhold judgment until I watch it again, but I think people overrate the episode quite a lot. Time's Arrow is, as you said, like paying off all of the background shit with Beatrice and Hollyhock and what's going on there. Because after Hollyhock ODs and he finds out that Beatrice, I mean, I feel like I need to do so much groundwork here. Hollyhock came to him and they're trying to figure it out. And then they go and see his mother, who's in an old folks home, and like, she has a freak out and has to move in with them. And then it comes to light, she has been drugging Hollyhock's coffee because she has a real thing about, you know, she's fat phobic as shit because she is of a different era and she has the worst father in the world. And after he finds that out, he shoves her in the worst old folks home he can find. And it's like, fuck you, basically. And then we come back to that and see just her like slipping out of touch with reality, misremembering certain things. And then, you know, like, it's all done again, like abstract style, where like we
never see Henrietta's face. It's always all of, scribbled out.
Yeah, everyone who's like, you know, a waiter, a house, you know, people in hospitality.
Someone that she wouldn't know the name of. Has no face. They might.
They've got scribbles over their faces, like a big, you know, you give a kid and be like, and this is his hair, kind of thing, and then like. You have stuff like at the party, everyone other than the important people who are talking, they have just no face. Like, they just have a blank face. And there's stuff like that. They will flash to something for a second. You talked about, like, the looming specter of Honey Sugarman. When she's asked what her mother would think, she says she doesn't think much. And they flash for a second. This silhouette with like a white stitched scar from where Joseph made his wife have a lobotomy because she was horrifically sad that her son died and was being, you know, hysterical in public, kind of thing. They do that, and they will cut to a doll burning in the fire, and we find out why that is. And just something as simple as her saying that her parents knew, you know, how to make a marriage last or whatever, and then you cut to him, like, you know, they don't show it, but like basically abusing her. Just all these like little touches, and like Bojack's father says he's coming to a hat in hand, and then a hat appears in his hand, kind of stuff. So they do all the artsy stuff, but it's also just, it's so devastatingly written. I think it gets attention because of the art flourishes, but I think the drama here and like showing how this bullshit plays out over generations and showing all these like big societal problems and big like relationship problems that people have and the attitudes of the times and how it impacts children, you know, it's all fucking sublime.
It's genuinely incredible. I mean, it's so interesting to think of it as like, because not only is it paying off all of the season's kind of like little breadcrumbs that have been left aside, but it's also paying off kind of four seasons of why the character of Bojack is the way that he is. Yeah. And like, we've obviously had like the seedings of, oh, he had a bad family. But
yeah, like it seems just as simple as they were shitty and argued a lot and his dad was a bad writer and drank and stuff. But to, like, see the extent of how bad it... Like, that's almost a triviality compared to, like, seeing how far back this goes.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? So the fact that Her brother dies during World War One or Two?
Two, because he says it's those the thing I was made to say by myself.
Yeah, so her brother dies in World War Two. She then, her mother is lobotomized because she is grieving too heavily, and so basically becomes a non-person. I don't even think they mention like when her mother dies at any point.
They don't at all.
Like she's just gone. Like from all idea of like who she is from the point she has lobotomy and like it. And obviously that happens back in episode 2 of the season, but it still like looms large over this.
Yeah.
She contracts scarlet fever, and her father makes the decision to burn all of her possessions, including her baby doll, which...
And we had, in Stupid Piece of Shit, she really latched on to a doll and was like distraught when it was taken from her. And you think it's just her addled mind, and it's like, yes, but actually. And they juxtaposed that with... Oh, I mean... We'll talk about it.
But yeah, but you've got all this stuff with, like, I mean, what, her mum, one of her mum's last words to her is, like, promise me, Beatrice, you'll never love anything as much as I loved your brother.
Yep.
So...
She's discouraged from forming emotional attachments by her mother and her father. She is bullied for her weight. Like, you'll have these throwaway lines about how, like, ice cream is for boys. A good snack for a woman is, like, a piece of lemon with sugar on it and stuff like that. And she's bullied for being fat by fellow kids. And to stress, it's fine to be fat, but she is factually not fat. She is bullied for being fat. She is told by her father that because of the scarlet fever, her throat has nearly swollen shut, so she might finally be able to drop that weight that she's been... You know, just all these things, and like, you know, reading builds your brain, which takes away resources from your breasts and hips and stuff like that. And like, you know, he is just like hardcore, the most evil person in the entire show, because he's got no, like, I don't want to say he's got no excuses. There's nothing like wrong with him. He is just horrible, just pure evil manifest.
Just. Do we get more Matthew Broderick after this point? I can't remember if this is it.
But I don't. No,
I think he's in the finale, or like the hell episode.
Yeah. So she like is absorbing all of this, and we've seen her taking digs at Hollyhock throughout the season about her weight, and then, you know, we find out that leads to her drugging her and stuff like that. But yeah, through her whole childhood, discouraged from emotion, discouraged, you know, fat phobia. Bullying, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. And then that leads through to, like, she does seem a remarkably well-adjusted teen or early...
But she still does the rebellion thing, where, like, she does what her father wants, but the moment she gets an opportunity to rebel by meeting Butterscotch Horseman, she immediately is like, I'm going to go shag you in a car and then get pregnant and ruin my father's plans for me to marry into the creamer.
The Sugarman Creamerman, like, coalition. We've heard Will Arnett do Butterscotch Horseman for, like, harsh one-liners before. What do you think of him in, like, extended talking scenes?
I mean, I think he's actually, like, managed to find a way to differentiate the voices, like, pretty effectively. Like, he's adds a little bit more gruffness to
it. It's difficult because your go-to to sound older is to, like, be really gruff and really, you know, no pun intended, hoarse. But, like, he's already so high on that level... already, and then I feel he hams it up a bit for BoJack. So to find another level, like, must have been difficult. But yeah, I really like, you know, this is a tale as old as time. Like, he is this wanky, dreamy writer, or he wants to be a writer. Like, he clearly hasn't ever actually really written anything. And like, I think she likes him because he's a bit rough, you know, and like, he is like conversationally charming, that he can make a woman laugh, but then like, he has no follow through, you know, like, he fake numbers her, he, you know, just like BoJack does.
He also knows about the stuff that she's, like, been reading about, so, like, when he comes in and he thinks that she won't know the Beat Poets, and she knows all this stuff, I think it's like, oh, I've not actually had a chance to talk about art with all these people who are, like, rich and kind of a little bit dumb, and, like, look down on me because I'm a woman, but, like, maybe we can actually, like, talk about this stuff.
But in that, of course, like, patronizing way, it was like, you, and here's where you ask me, you know, like, where are those places and their writers and stuff, and like he's like a bit of a dick, but in a way that is appealing when you're like a teenager 20 something girl who is like just trying to find herself and then is having a prim perfect bubble wrapped world pushed on her, and then she goes and bangs him in the car, and then when she tells him she's pregnant, that he paints the romantic picture of heading out west together, And then just, yeah, immediately goes to shit. And I
You get the one of them lying in bed and him just refusing to go take care of BoJack and her pleading with this child to stop crying. And that's what turns her on to, like, drugs and alcohol to basically just take care of this
make
child.
Make the headaches go away, like, make looking after the child less of a... And his politics changing from, like, scene to scene to scene, where, like, he's a hardcore, like, leftist writer, and then he's, like, turned on his heroes and is like, well, they're a bunch of commies, and, like, for it to end up with him saying that art should be straightforward and utilitarian, and it's like, this is the horrorscape we're living in now, where we're talking about fucking... There are these dicks on the internet who want to take classical works and run them through AI and change their parameters and like, you know, just warping what art is meant to be, and like, but Elon also is ruling the world. And
But also the old school idea that, like, oh, you'll get more right wing as you grow up when you get money. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, like, he forgoes his artistic roots to basically take the, was it 6-figure, 7-figure salary? I forget what number they
are. But whatever it is, it would have been more then than it is now.
I mean, there's just so many good moments of, like, they mm-hmm. basically, he takes the job and immediately they live a better lifestyle.
But then of
like,
course
the cut from like when she like says to BoJack is like, I need you to grow up and be something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And then
so like planting that, like, he must become famous and that defines who he is, like, seed. And like, you know, we've seen scenes of them having a rager while he's just trying to be a kid, but to have the extended, like, I'm not a baby, I'm 7 or whatever it is, and like having an actual conversation where he's being talked shit to, it's like, yeah, this is where the damage is happening.
Like, and like the other things where like she's never been kind to him at all, but she will be behind his back. And so you get like the conversation they have after horsing around has ended and she's trying to give him a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And is basically talking about like why she never divorced her husband, and BoJack's just like, that's a valid reason to seek a divorce and all the rest of it. Yeah. But then you also get the scenes in the nursing home and the scenes where she's talking to Henrietta and all the rest of it, where mm-hmm. she knows BoJack episodes and like is recommending
like,
them.
She talks shit about the show to his face, but like she's clearly watched it all and like she read his book, and like she's not equipped to talk to him truthfully. And like, my grandmother,
or she
was...
thinks truthfully you have to be blunt and honest with them, in a way, like you can't give them praise because that will make them feel like they've succeeded and there's still room for them to cry.
And it is just such a tragedy of like how these things can have a deep lasting, and like it can become too late for you. Like, my grandmother was raised in a very like Victorian style home where like their mother never hugged them, and like she was the youngest of 8, so she was very territorial, and like she was kind of a horrible woman, so, and like I don't mind saying that, but like when she was like very not well towards the end of her life, she had to ask my mother if like we would hug her, kind of thing. And like just the damage that shit does on people, and it sounds fake, but it's real. And like that they are just not in a place where they can communicate on it. Like, it's way too late for them. And, like, BoJack is trying to find something in himself. And, like, it's that, you know, we'll talk about it in the later seasons, but, like, it's, like, he's finally actually done the emotional work, but, like, he can never undo what he's done. And it's, like, ugh. is to do the reveal that, like, Butterscotch knocked up the housekeeper and... Beatrice has been calling him Henrietta throughout the show in the present, and it turns out Henrietta was the housekeeper, and that is Hollyhock's mother. So Hollyhock is not BoJack's daughter, she is his half-sister. And the stuff with like how they handle, like, he makes Beatrice have the conversation with Henrietta about having an abortion. Beatrice, like, is the one that's in the hospital with her when she gives birth, and we see that no one was in the hospital with her when she gave birth, because another thing of another time where, like, women were left to do that, and men went and smoked cigars. And, like, to juxtapose the flashbacks of, like, her father taking the doll away from her and burning it, with Henrietta pleading to hold Hollyhock just once or whatever, and she takes it away, and she takes her away, kind of thing. It's just, like, it's all so, like... laser guided. And the
and then also backing it up with the fact that Beatrice turns to Henrietta and is just like, I want you to promise me that you will not give up your dreams for this child.
Just as her mother told her, like, promise me you won't do this. And, like, she does become a nurse, we find out. So she did do what she was told. And it's like, you know, who knows what damage is sitting with Henrietta out there in her own show in Minnesota.
But it's this, like, incredibly astute thing of, in terms of, I mean, obviously there's the old adage of, like, they fuck you up, your mum and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of, it feels like each parenting generation, they try to do the opposite of what they feel their parents did to fuck them up. And so Beatrice kind of comes at it from, like, my parents never did this for me, so therefore you're going to take this, like, opposite view to what I, the complete opposite view to what I did. And there's no internal sense of compromise where maybe you can be a mother and also do your studies to become a nurse. It'll be tough.
It'll be
really hard to, like, do that thing. But you do not have to not love your child because your brother died and your mum got a lobotomy. You do not have to.
It's all part and parcel of, like, no one talked about these things that were troubling them for an extremely long time. And, like, you know, we have to work through our shit, everybody. That's what the show is about.
And the one thing I really like, which is kind of more of a seasonal thing, is I really like that even before the reveal that BoJack is actually Hollyhock's sister, the relationship has always felt more like a sibling relationship. It has never felt like a father-daughter relationship.
He just, you know, he doesn't know how to be a dad, but he can be a, you know, he can finally... He basically treats her as, like, a friend he definitely doesn't want to sleep with. And, like, it's like, this is what an actual, honest, emotional relationship is like, BoJack. Yeah, it's real. And, like, you know, the mysteries of, like, just really struggling to find who BoJack slept with 9 months before she was born throughout this, you know, and they just really can't do it. And they try and open the adoption. And then we find out that, obviously, that got forwarded to Beatrice because she took care of everything. So, like, the papers have just been sitting in their office in BoJack's living room the entire time. Yeah, it's all really, really good. And the sort of crushing final moment of, like, you know, he's dumped her in this terrible nursing home. She becomes lucid for a second and he just lies to her and tells her she's at the old Sugarman place, and he does her a final kindness of, like throwing in all these, like, details that he's learned from going to the old Sugarman place and everything. So is it her funeral or his funeral that...
It's her funeral in Freecheer.
Right, yeah. So, like, the implication here, and I think it is true, is, like, this is the last time he sees her. And he dumps her there, but, you know, he had this dream of telling her, like, if she became lucid enough, he would tell her, fuck you. And he doesn't do that. He kind of does her a kindness. And it's just, just all the themes, all the writing, it's all led to all of it. And,
It's interesting where, like, this isn't, I mean, obviously we're getting ahead on season five now, but, like, it's twice now where the show will have this kind of, like, final moment with a character, and ultimately the funeral will come, like, five episodes after this point. The relationship is done at this point. And, like, but that thing is, like, when is the F-bomb in this season? Because obviously, like, they withhold them. I can't remember if anyone actually says
it's whenever they go to the nursing home, because BoJack says that is his dream to say, hey, mom, fuck you. I can't remember which episode that is in.
It's not the same as previous seasons, is it? Where, like, this isn't the sign of, like, I guess it is the dissolution of the relationship, but it's in a different way to how it has been in previous seasons.
Yeah,
like, it is BoJack drawing a line under his relationship with his mother, but it's not Todd or Charlotte or Herb kind of, like, telling it to BoJack.
Yeah, it's an episode five, it's in Thoughts and Prayers, that he tries to put on this elaborate show to trick her into thinking it's a real episode of Horsing Around so that she will get with it enough. And, like, you think it's so that he could, like, talk things through with her, and he's like, no, I want to tell her fuck you, but I can't tell her fuck you when she's not with it, because that doesn't mean anything. He wants her to know that she fucked him up. Yeah, all real good. Hollyhock is an angel throughout. I didn't even really notice until this rewatch that they start to draw her skinnier and skinnier each time. Until it's when you see the flashback of, like when he puts it all together and they've drawn her much heavier. It's like, oh shit, yeah, they have been doing that. And there's something really, really dark about when she does pass out. She's, like, waving her phone around in front of her face, and she manages to catch herself just for, like, a half second in a selfie that's coherent And then she passes out on the floor. It's like, I don't know, there's something really haunting about that to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, before just, we...
I want to finish off with one thing.
So, yes.
So before we end, BoJack Horseman this season received three nominations at the Annies. I think it won a couple of things. I think WGA gave Owen Ward a stupid piece of shit, but there were three Annie nominations. And probably two of those are for stupid piece of shit. Very obviously, I think, like, that is one that resonated with an awful lot of people. For stupid piece of shit, they get nominated for outstanding achievement in editorial,
right?
Obviously editing an episode, which makes a lot of sense for that episode. It is also nominated in best general audience animated television broadcast production, so basically best episode of a of an animated show in that year, in which it is nominated against Big Mouth, Am I Gay.
What is that?
The Big Mouth episode, the episode I Am
Gay. Oh, sorry. I was like, what show is I Am Gay? Right, okay. Right.
Big Mouth, Am I Gay? BoJack Horseman, Stupid Piece of Shit. Rick and Morty, Pickle Rick. Robot Chicken, Freshly Baked, The Robot Chicken Santa Claus Pot Cookie Freakout Special, Special Edition.
Right.
And then Samurai Jack, I'm not going to translate the Roman numerals, XCIII. So.
Right.
Of course it loses to Pickle Rick.
Of course.
The
Pickle
true
Rick broke Rick and Morty forever, is the thing. Anyway.
But ultimately, though, the one that I want, we're going to play a game here, is one BoJack performance received outstanding achievement for voice acting in an animated television show for this year. Who do you think it is?
Amy Sedaris.
It's not Amy Sedaris.
Oh, I thought that's how you were trying to set it up as a segue, is like all her work with the...
No. It will make more sense as a post-segue. Yeah.
Is it Matthew Broderick?
It's not Matthew Broderick. One last guess.
Will Arnett?
No, it is Wendy Malick.
Oh, okay. That makes
Wendy
sense.
Malick gets a nomination for Beatrice in Time's Arrow, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Up against Jeremy Rowley as Bunsen in Bunsen is a Beast. no idea what that show is. Chris Diamantopoulos as Mickey Mouse in The Mickey Mouse Show. Uh-huh. Nicholas Cantu as Gumball in The Amazing World of Gumball. And the winner in what might be the most depressing thing, because it's not even for an episode, as far as I can tell, is Tom Kenny as SpongeBob. And it's like some real bullshit. Like, you are really coming to me in 2018 and giving an award to Tom Kenny for voicing a character he's been doing for 20 years at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know the history of the Annies at this point. Maybe this is the first time they've given Tom Kenny this award, and it's like a massive
makeup. I doubt it. Because, he was looming large in the 2000s, let alone 2018. And, like, that it's four kind of, like, generic cartoons, and then it's like, oh, and you know that big episode where Wendy Malick was like, you know, fucking where's my Emmy kind of thing? Oh, that's gross. Right, we've had a lot of heavy stuff. We've had a lot of bad news there from the Annies of 2018. I'm sure I'll continue to be disappointed by the Annies. It's time for our other most favourite segment of the show. It's Tongue Twisters. And let me tell you, putting Courtney Portnoy in the show sure did produce a lot of these, to the point I had to delete a bunch off the list because there's just too many. But something as simple as Something as simple as Portnoy finds joy in Hoi Polloi Boy Toy is good, but there is an absolutely insane one that you're going to do. Do you have it in front of you?
I've got it in front of me.
Okay.
You know Courtney Portnoy. You probably recall when she soared as a thorny horticulturist in One Sworded Fortnight with a short-skirted sorceress. How would you enjoy joining Portnoy for a scorched soy porterhouse pork four-courser at Koi? Glorify your sauce, but don't make it feel forced, of course, and try the borscht.
Well done. I have a couple.
Which is them trying to convince Diane to go interview Courtney Portnoy.
Yeah, I have a couple that I will try. But Courtney, more importantly, audiences are going to adore your tour de force performance as the forceful denim-clad court reporter in the Court Reporter Sported Jorts, the jet-setting jort-sporting court reporter story. And Corpse Me If You Can, the 1940s Can-France set story of a can-can dancer who contracts cancer but continues to can-can as a canny cadaver who plays the accordion with Kevin Corrigan, Kevin Klein, Chris Pine, and Chris Kattan. Amy Sedaris is a goddamn hero. Yeah. Because these are so hard, and like we flubbed them like right there with them written in front of us. Amazing stuff. Right, that is another excellent season of BoJack behind us. Possibly the best one. We'll find out next week. as we get into season 5, it is time for John Filbert to do stuff. He's a man out of time.
BoJack's third show as the lead.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm really
If we don't include the aborted pilot for Ethan around.
Yeah. We never know what happened there, do we? I don't know. We'll find out.
That's it. Like there's almost no of anyone else from horsing around this season. Like this is the most, other than the stuff with Beatrice, and even then the one they bring in to do the voices on it is Sarah Lynn. Yeah. Like Sarah Lynn is the character, and just one final thing. I do always enjoy when you can tell where in the run of BoJack Horseman they are with how aged up Sarah Lynn is in the various clips.
Did you notice that he's changed his ringtone at the end from the horsing around theme to just a generic ringtone?
I hadn't.
Ah, well, yeah. He's finally left horsing around behind. Maybe it's a one-time thing and he goes back to it, but yeah, he's had that like MIDI version of the horsing around theme as his ringtone, and it isn't anymore. And as he left horsing around behind, we must leave behind season 4. Look ahead to season 5. This is a long one, but it's because it is a big, big, big one. And there's a reason season 6 is split in half. But next week, season 5. Looking forward to it. Thank you for your efforts, your incredible memory, Benjamin Phillips. Thank you.
Thank you.
And until next time, suck a dick, dumb shits.